You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of April 12th, 2016, and episode number 261. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Got a full slate tonight. There's some stuff I may even leave off. That's how much stuff I've got to cover tonight. But this week's news will include the Loch Ness Monster is on the move. She's packed her bags and she's left Loch Ness. Where'd she go? Well, you'll find out. You haven't seen that one already. We'll cover UFO sighting statistics for March if I have time. Now, that's the one that's on the line here. I may let that one go for the next show. And we'll talk about an article. Yes, an article in Playboy about haunted places. Yes, an article. A ghost is exposed. Speaking of Playboy, a ghost is exposed in the UK. And we're going to talk about cryonics. Cryonics. What is that? It's not about crayons or crying. It's about freezing things. And that's going to take a giant hop forward. And we'll also talk about how reliable are witnesses and why not. Gotten quite a few people all over the place from online to people that I know at work have asked me about this. What's going on with this bear chasing the snowboarder video? We're going to talk about that later on in the show. Got some little inside information about that we'll talk about. Also, the book of the week for this week kind of goes in a different direction. You're not going to see this one coming. It's a good book. It's a little out there when you first hear about this, but trust me, it's meaningful. And this week's news is brought to you by the International Cryptozoology Museum, located in Portland, Maine, which is the world's only cryptozoology museum. The International Cryptozoology Museum opened in 2003 and contains rare and original items collected by Lauren Coleman, the director of the museum. Visit the International Cryptozoology Zoology Museum at 11 Avon Street in downtown Portland, Maine. And for more information, please visit cryptozoologymuseum.com. And if you've been following the show, you've probably heard that intro thing about 100 times or so. And you also know that the International Cryptozoology Museum is currently moving to Thompson Point, which is a little closer towards the water up there in Portland, Maine. They're going to have some new eateries. It's going to be a good time. It's going to be worth going up there, probably when it gets a little bit warmer than what it is right now, and going up there and enjoying the afternoon, going up there and seeing the ICM. And also check out the books. There's a lot of cool books at the International Cryptozoology Museum for sale, including mine, The Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist, which I'll be talking about a lot over the next month or so at a bunch of events coming out quickly. And speaking of that, wow, what an intro. April 16th is upon us already, 4 days and counting to the Butler Paranormal Convention in Butler, Pennsylvania, brought on by the Butler Organization for Research of the Unexplained, BORU, and Center for Unexplained Events, Q. That'll be taking place at the Tanglewood Senior Center at 10 Austin Avenue in Lindora, Pennsylvania, this Saturday, April 16th. Be there. The event will run from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., and admission at the door is $10, and you can save a dollar on admission with a donation of a non-perishable food item, and you must bring one food item for each ticket to be discounted. I'm lucky. I'm sandwiched right in the middle of this. As the speaker, it's kind of cool. Ronald Murphy kicks things off at 11 o'clock. He's talking about the Dog Man, tracking the werewolf through history. Next up is Brett McGinnis. He's going to be talking about his sci-fi channel TV show, Ghost Hunters Academy, that he was a part of, as well as paranormal documentary, The Staring Man. Then at 2 o'clock, I will take the stage in Butler, Pennsylvania. And again, we'll be talking about my handbook for the amateur cryptozoologist with a balanced look at cryptozoology, research, and investigation. Following myself will be Karen Dolan talking about The Truth Is Out There, paranormal news, and the mainstream media. That's going to be fun. It's going to be cool to listen to that. And then wrapping up the show at 5 o'clock, Stan Gordon will be talking about strange creatures of Pennsylvania. Tell you, it's going to be a great time at this event. It's so many people were there last year. It was incredible. And it's the 9th annual. So this is very well established. I think it's been in the same location for a number of years now. And the local people love this show. It's really engaging. You'll be surprised at the kind of people that show up at this event. You'll look over there and go, who is that? And these are just the 5 speakers. There'll also be a lot of other vendors there selling a lot of great goods. And some authors maybe will pop in there. It's going to be a lot of fun. The Men in Black are going to be there too. Door prizes, raffles, and a whole lot more. I'm excited for this. This is going to be a really fun time, and it's going to be great to network with these people and listen to what they have to say. And, of course, getting up there and talking about what I have to talk about is always fun to help educate and share my knowledge and my information as well. And another event quickly coming up, May 6th to the 8th, which I'll be talking about a few more weeks here, so bear with it. You're going to hear it. That's going to be the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure with host Eric Altman. And this one keeps getting bigger and bigger every day. Every day there's something that pops up that I'm even more excited about this event for. And that's going to be taking place in Farmington, Pennsylvania. Stan Gordon, Squatch Detective radio host Steve Coles, Dave Dragason, and wildlife biologist Rob Gratson will also be speaking at that event, as will I. And it's going to be cool because you're going to have us kind of wedged in between workshops. So you have workshop, speaker, workshop, and all this is going to tie in together. So by the end of the day, you're going to be extremely knowledgeable about not just Bigfoot, but cryptozoology, hiking, looking for sign, making tracks. There's just so much that's going to be out there. Even if you just showed up and listened to that, that's going to be a lot of fun. But there's going to be night and day hikes. This is where you put the theory into practice. This is where you can't just go up there and pretend like you're somebody. This is where we show you how we do what we do. We'll show you how to find tracks. We'll show you how to find trails, animal trails, game trails. We'll show you the prints. We're going to not just tell you, we're going to show you. That's something you don't normally get at these types of events. Usually you're just sitting in a hotel. You're sitting in a beautiful building and you just hear people talk about what they do. You get to see PowerPoints, which is fun. It's great, but you can't really practice it. Now, some of these conventions, you will do the ghost hunts afterwards at those locations or another location, which is cool. It is hands-on. It's neat. But this is a great dynamic for cryptozoology, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And like I said, there's also some giveaways and stuff that's going to be happening. A fundraising event essentially is what this is. And Dr. Jeff Meldrum, Cliff Barachman of Finding Bigfoot, Squatch Detective Steve Cole, Stan Gordon, Jeff Bellinger, myself, Rick Fisher, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Lyle Blackburn, and a whole bunch of other people have donated items that will be part of the charity auction. And there's going to be a raffle. And half of the 50-50 drawing will benefit 3 charities and will be equally divided among those 3. Unity, A Journey of Hope, Fayette Friends of Animals, and Lucky Paws Animal Rescue. So it's great to help educate and talk about all this stuff, but it's another thing. We're going to be helping local charities, and I'm excited about that. I think it's great to give back no matter what you give back to, especially those kind of organizations that really do benefit not just the people that live in those areas, but animals as well. I mean, that's what we're going to be talking about, cryptozoology. So it's just fitting that we do give back. I know Eric is a big animal lover. He's got his cats. That's cool. I'm not a cat guy. I love dogs. But, hey, we all have our love for animals, and it's great that we're giving back for that. And I'm truly excited to be a part of that. And if that's not good enough, Trapper John R. Tice from the TV show Mountain Monsters, as seen on Destination America, will be there Saturday signing autographs and things. And if you get pre-registered, you're going to get this really awesome limited edition 11 by 17 PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure poster. It is sweet. I can't wait to get one. I'm going to get autographs. I'm going to be like a little kid in a candy store. It's going to be exciting. And you can have John Tice sign that if you're into that show. Rumor has it that other people from that show will also be there. And you never know who might show up to this event. It's going to be a great time. And for me, as far as the little tour for this book is concerned, I'll wrap it up a few days later on May 12th. They visit the West Public Library and where I can decompress. I'll talk about what happened at the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure at that event and hopefully have some great pictures, some audio, and whatever else happens at that event. So there's my shameless plugs. I'll have a few more events coming up towards the end of the show. They're going to be taking place this weekend. So if you're out and about, might want to check these shows out. And always check out paranewsinsider.com and click on the events tab at the top. You never know what's going on locally. And this list is not completely 100% accurate. It's missing some. I'm sure there's some stuff out there that I've missed. And if you have any information about any event and you'd like to hear it here, you'd like to see it here, or you're going to go, let me know and I'll put it on there and I'll talk about it. Get the stuff promoted for you guys out there, because these things are important and they do benefit things. Now, sometimes, yes, they are kind of not good, because they do. Sometimes people are out for money, to make a buck or whatever. But all in all, I'd say a good majority of these things are put on by awesome people who just want to help educate. They want to bring knowledge and education. They want to bring people together and talk about these subject matters, whether it's ghosts, UFOs, cryptid, or all the above at one event, and offer people a chance to mix and mingle and talk and talk shop. It's always a lot of fun. So, cryptid news. Now, this was a story I kind of was ignoring, I guess is a good way to put it. Because, come on, it's just another video of something that somebody misidentified in the water. But this story has taken on a life of its own. It's a huge story, and it's still unfolding. And I probably would have continued to ignore this one, but it's happened again. How can you ignore something that's happened more than once? So if you haven't figured it out, I'm referring to the strange animal sighting that many are calling the Loch Ness Monster in the River Thames in England. Yes, it's spelled T-H-A-M-E-S, but they pronounce it Thames. I don't know why. I don't live there. I'm just stating facts here. The first sighting occurred near the O2 Arena in Greenwich, southeast London, while the person was filming from a cable car. Now, that video appeared online on March 27th, and a few people thought this was a little too close for comfort to April Fool's Day, which didn't help add too much credence to that video. That one was – the reason why I ignored that is it looked a little too weird. And it was more than likely just a logical explanation, whether it was junk trash in the river or it was a dolphin or other living animal. But it also looked weird because as soon as the person zoomed in and looked like they had it right in focus, the camera turned away and we lost view of this thing. And, you know, you're in a cable car. I get that. It's kind of hard to film it, but it just seemed a little hokey. So I didn't really talk about it very much. I figured it would just fade away and go away, but 5 days later, another video of something swimming in the river was captured by someone in a tour boat. The first video was highly questionable. Again, from the person who put it on YouTube, it was weird. This person had never done anything and all of a sudden just uploaded this and a couple of other things. And that's fine. But then all of a sudden they turned around and sold the rights to that video, which is – that's a red flag. That's a big red flag. That's like a 10-foot by 10-foot red flag raised – immediately when somebody's trying to make money off of a questionable video when you don't really know what's going on. I mean, it would be different if this animal jumped out of the water and latched onto a nearby boat or something and dragged it into the water. Okay, that's worth money. But this, no, it's not. And also, again, the way it was filmed was a little questionable in my opinion. Researcher Lauren Coleman who I just mentioned as the director of the International Cryptozoology Museum in Portland, Maine, told Discovery News for an article written by Benjamin Radford, quote, "When investigating videos such as this one, we at the museum start with the circumstances of who took the footage, why, when, and so forth. The answers here all appear to be innocent enough, but why the excitement? There are several mundane explanations for this one, and nothing monstrous is needed for solving this case. Last year, the UK media reported more than 2,000 seals and 450 porpoises and dolphins were spotted in the Thames over the last decade. This seems to be at least a pair of dolphins swimming in the gray waters of the Thames," unquote. So was it the Loch Ness Monster? More than likely not. I mean, Loch Ness is well over 500 miles away. You know, fine, it can swim and all, but I think it's silly to think that this mythical monster would decide to head south to London, although it does make a pretty headline. But I'm sure the people up in Scotland right now are not happy about this. And you watch, Loch Ness Monster will make an appearance in the news pretty soon. Somebody's going to see it back up there just to get the headline swung back up. That'd be pretty cool, though, if it was in England, down in London. The culprit is more than likely a known animal swimming. If I had to guess, and what I've seen a lot of other people talk about, it's just an animal swimming in the murky water of the river. And my guess is also that it's probably not the same thing that we saw in the prior video is what's popped up in the second one. But one thing I am sure of, we've not seen the last of this story. And it's going to be interesting now that people are going to be focusing on the river a little bit more than what they have been. And as the tour season starts to kick in down there, it'll be interesting to see if anybody else sees this or documents what's going on down there as well. So we're going to talk ghost news. I'm going to skip UFO stuff for now. If I have time, I'm going to double back and we'll talk about that. That's not really dated news. Well, I guess neither is this one. This is back from last year. I don't know how I missed this, but in 2014, Playboy.com went PG-13 and safe to be viewed at work with no more nude photographs online. Last fall, the magazine announced that there would be no more nude photographs in the magazine either in 2016. That's a big change for this magazine. And while I'm certain that many men bought the magazine for the articles, the magazine has had to up its game in order to transition to a more print-friendly version. And come on, what's the simplest way to do this? Print a story about creepy haunted places you can go and spend the night in. Well, actually, this article was published in last October, and I just don't know how I missed this article. I mean, it was in the magazine. I don't know how I missed it. The article is called 10 Haunted Places You Can Actually Go Spend the Night In and How Much They Cost. That's a pretty cool headline. Goes right to the point here, and it does exactly that for the most part. Now, the first one on the list is the Villisca Axe Murder House in Villisca, Iowa. There are two sentences about the murders and modern-day paranormal investigators. And then the pitch line. Quote, "For $428, you can rent out the house for up to six people for an entire night where you'll sleep in the rooms where the actual murders took place," unquote. Axe not included. The second stop is the Queen Mary in Long Beach, California, which is said to be voted in the top 10 most haunted places in the world by Time magazine. And while they state you can rent rooms, take ghost tours, and participate in investigations and other ghost-related activities at the Queen Mary, no pricing is given. Whoops. Second part of the story, and they've already not filled in what they promised here. Now, another location on Playboy's list that also appears on the Time magazine list is the Myrtles Plantation in St. Francisville, Louisiana. You can rent a room here for about $114 all the way up to $400 a night, or just book a tour for a whole lot less. Also on the list, the Shanley Hotel in Napanock, New York, also makes Playboy's list despite a limited haunted historical background given, and has stated that you can rent a room for $85 or the entire hotel for $1,200 a night. and the Lizzie Borden Bed and Breakfast. I don't know about that place. It also joins the Axe portion of the Haunted lineup, located in Fall River, Massachusetts. And while the name speaks for itself, the author did not come up with any pricing whatsoever. Well, next on the list was Waverly Hills Sanatorium, located in Louisville, Kentucky. It states that guests can investigate for $100 a person. I don't know if that's accurate, but okay. I know I spent a lot more when I went down there. The paragraph for Waverly ends with, quote, "Be warned, this is supposedly one of the most active haunted buildings in America," unquote. Well, personally, not to break anyone's heart or irritate anyone or get anybody mad, I thought it was the biggest letdown of any location I've ever visited, ever investigated. And even one of our investigators fell asleep during an EVP session. I know I promised you I wouldn't say it on the air, but hey, it happened. Now, I mentioned the Shanley Hotel. Now we have the Stanley Hotel, located in Estes Park, Colorado. We talked about this location a couple of weeks ago, which it no longer allows outside investigations, but they'll still have ghost tours. Again, no pricing for that, but again, the stakes have changed for that a little bit. We also have the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum in Western West Virginia. It makes a list and states you can investigate for $100 for 6.5 hours. That's pretty good, but unfortunately, what the article doesn't tell you is it's probably more than likely with like 500 other people at the same time. Not fun. One of the first mass investigations I ever went on, I wanted to go to Mansfield Reformatory really, really bad. And I got an offer just like this. Hey, like $80, you can come down and investigate. I was like, wow, that's great. Here's the check. And I show up and the place is packed. It's like wall-to-wall people. I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. Wow. It was a little crazy. There was a lot of weird stuff going on. So it's almost worth investing and paying and buying the whole place out. If you're going to do something, do it right. Ninth on the list is one that many may not recognize. And it's one of the most interesting, I think. It's the Cecil Hotel in Los Angeles, California. This hotel is known for at least 3 murders, and as well as the bizarre story of Lisa Lamb, who died in the sealed water tank on the roof of the building. Now, if you were paying attention to social media today, released by the LAPD about her being in the elevator, she was acting really, really strange. And this was the last time anyone had seen her. Well, at least surveillance had seen her. And a few days later, I don't remember how many days later, she was discovered in the water tank on the roof of the building. It was sealed up. Kind of weird. Nobody knows how she got in there. Nobody was ever caught for foul play. And she was discovered in the tank after guests complained of low water pressure and a strange taste to the water. Yikes. Remember that next time you're at a hotel. What the article doesn't tell you, there's so many of these stories or so many of these places I could go into much detail, but this one you never heard of. So I kind of dipped into the research bin a little bit. And the story of Elisa became viral due to the release, like I said, of the closed circuit television footage of her in the elevator where she acted strangely. The article also doesn't tell you that the hotel was the site for numerous suicides, as well as the hideout for at least 2 serial killers. One being Richard Ramirez, who was dubbed the Night Stalker. No, it wasn't Kolchak. Among other names by the media, who was known to have killed at least 14 victims in the mid-1980s. The article does state that the Cecil Hotel was renamed and rebranded, but fails to tell you that it is now known as Stay on Main. Stay on Main does not have any ghost tours and will probably not let you investigate. So just get a room and drink the water. The last location in the article is essentially just an advertisement for Troy Taylor's American Hauntings tour that states you can investigate in numerous locations offered by the tour company. Well, I think that's kind of cheating. But if you're going to take that route, and if you're going to do that, you should also mention somebody whom I'm familiar with in this area of the country, and that's Haunted Heartland Tours with Sherry Brake. That's a shameless plug for her. And if I left you off back at the Time Magazine's list of the most haunted places, this not only includes the Queen Mary and Myrtle's Plantation, like I mentioned, but also has the Amityville House, Eastern State Penitentiary, Edinburgh Castle, Gettysburg Battlefield, the Tower of London, the Whaley House, the White House, and the Winchester House in San Jose, California, which is probably the most interesting one on both lists. I know that's on my must-see places before you die. What do they call that? I don't know, some kind of list, whatever that list is. That's on my list. The Winchester House, if you've never heard of this, oh my gosh, Google it, look it up. The lady was insane. She was the heir to the Winchester rifle, repeating arms fortune. She built this weird, wacky house that was continuously changing in construction. And there are doors that you open up and it goes straight to the ground. And she believed that ghosts would get her and kill her from the people that were killed by the Winchester arms. She was a little loony. And that scene in this house, it's also a little loony. So if you're ever in San Jose, you have to go to the Winchester House. And let me know how it was, because I still want to go there one day. Now, if you want to lose a lot of sleep, check out the video. Like I mentioned, it's on the Facebook page for the Paranormal News Insider. It's creepy times 10. She's in this elevator. She's looking around. She looks out. She looks down the hallway. A lot of people thought that somebody was following her, but a lot of other people also think that she's a little schizophrenic. I think there was just something wrong with her at this point, and something just boiled over, but police never figured it out. Can you just imagine drinking that water and going, what is wrong with this water? It tastes funny. The water pressure is weird. They need to get this place fixed. And then a couple of days later, finding out that somebody was stuffed in that water tank. Yikes. The scary thing is, this just happened a couple of years ago. This wasn't something that happened 20 years ago. I think it was 3 years ago. I think it was 2013. Gross. Probably didn't hear about that, did you? And one other thing here, Disneyland Paris. I don't know if you heard about this, but this might be moving on to this list, or one of these lists of the most haunted locations in the world pretty soon. Uh-oh, what happened in Disneyland Paris? Well, police reported that a 45-year-old technician was electrocuted to death while working in the Phantom Manor Haunted House attraction back on April 2nd. The manor remained closed for a few days pending a full police investigation. And back in 2010 at Disneyland Paris, a worker died while cleaning the It's a Small World ride as it became trapped under a boat. And all I can say about that, I know it's grim to say this, probably rude and mean. You probably think a little less of me, but I don't care. I just hope that he didn't have to listen to that damn song as he was dying. Okay, crickets. Well, I'll leave you with that and for a second here. And I'm going to mention, or at least let you know, that you are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com. And this is the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Well, I kicked off the night about a half hour ago. I got a half hour to go, but this is just a warm-up party. Tonight, there is one heck of a show coming on tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern. I think he just graced us with his presence in the chat room, folks. It's Frank Lee. He has the honor and privilege of talking to Professor of Astronomy and Astrophysics, Planetary Scientist, Museum of Science and Industry, Space Programs Director, Antonio Paris. Now, that all sounds well and good there about being a scientist and astronomer and blah, blah, blah. Yay, good for him. But he's also very well versed in the UFO arena. And he's also right now in the hotbed of the paranormal news with the WOW signal. He's going out of his way to use science to see if he can find the answer to the WOW signal. And if he does, he's my hero. If he doesn't, he's still my hero. I love the WoW signal story, but it would be good to have an answer one way or the other about that story. I'm excited. And, you know, he would be one of the guests that I would want to have on a show. If I had still had a guest type of show format, I've had the chance to put back on the air a show called Paranexus Universe that I took over Paranexus as the executive director a couple of years ago. And that show has been at my disposal, never really brought it back. I wanted to get on the air and get used to doing a live show. All my prior shows from episode 230 were all pre-recorded. So I wanted to get the chance to do this, but this makes me want to get there and interview people. It would be a lot of fun. It's going to be a great show tonight. Antonio Paris on Paranormalities and Ponderings radio show with host Frank Lee tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, right here on WCJV Digital Broadcasting at WCJVRadio.com. And if you're hearing this broadcast right now, streaming live on Tuesday night, well, you can get a break between 8 and 9, I guess. I'll let you go for a little bit, and then you got to come back and listen. It's going to be a great show. And also Wednesday night, I know she's not here tonight. She's studying hard. You can catch Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson. She's got another great guest, a guy that I've got the pleasure to interview, I think at least once, maybe twice on two different shows, Lloyd Auerbach. Lloyd Auerbach. He will be on 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, Wednesday night. Man, it just makes me feel like resurrecting Paranexus Universe. Just, man, interviewing people. That, two great shows back to back. It's going to be, man, I can't wait for tonight, though. It's going to be awesome. So what else do we have? Well, let's continue with the ghost theme. Why not? Well, to this day, I'm not sure why people do this. There's a lot of these stories. Actually, there's a lot in the news right now. I think two or three that are happening right now. Pictures of houses. People taking pictures of houses and searching the windows looking for ghosts. I don't get. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. I'm not sure what's going on with that, but they're just, I don't know why. Why do people do this? I've seen a number of cases that I've investigated. I've seen a number of articles and pictures on social media throughout the years of all this stuff. I don't know why people do it. Most often, many times than not, it's pareidolia. Pareidolia. People are seeing things, they're seeing light and shadow, creating images that aren't really there. People find them where they want to see them, despite any accounts of ghostly activity or of people actually seeing ghosts peeking out of the windows. I just don't get it. Now, there's been a few of these stories lately, and there's two or three of them floating around right now. I don't even bother covering these stories because one way or the other, even if it is a ghost, there's no way to really tell. But more often than not, it's just pareidolia, and rarely enough you actually get a solution to that. And that's what happened with this particular case, a scary picture showing up in an article on Wales Online out of the United Kingdom. In the picture, it appeared a gruesome face was staring out of a window of the abandoned Mid-Wales Hospital, which was an asylum that closed in 1999. However, in the days since posting the article, Wales Online began to receive numerous notifications on their Facebook page that the image was of a Halloween mask that had been put there years ago and that is currently visible through the window. Oops. Well, you know, news is news, whether it's good news, whether it's accurate or inaccurate. It did the job. It got people to the website. I know I clicked on it. I didn't click any articles or advertisements or anything like that, but they got their money's worth out of me as well, I guess. But yeah, you think that somebody would have at street level would have seen this, and it's the photograph. It looks like it's taken during the day. I mean, why couldn't you see that? You're telling me you couldn't see that? You couldn't zoom? You don't have a zoom in your camera? Well, I guess most phones don't have a zoom or much of a zoom. Anyway, well, I'm going to jump to other news. And this one was also on social media during the week. And if you're not connected to me, the Paranormal News Insider, via social media, I do usually kind of divvy out the stories I talk about during the week on the website, as well as talk the archives and some events and things that are coming up. But sometimes I do kind of leak stories a little bit early before I actually cover them here on the Paranormal News. So you kind of get a little taste of what's to come. And this was a story that I did post on there about a rabbit brain. Yikes. Okay, well. And I'm not sure if this next story is really a true miracle, like a medical miracle, or a step toward a zombie apocalypse, or a computer takeover of the world. Who knows? Could go any way with this. And I'm also glad that the story was held off until after Easter. Researchers from 21st Century Medicine froze a rabbit brain and then successfully thawed it out with no damage. Yes, it sounds like something a kid does just a few years before he ends up in the newspaper as a serial killer, but this is science. The vascular system of the rabbit brain was filled with chemicals that help preserve the membranes, synapses, and other parts from decay before being lowered to a negative 211 degrees Fahrenheit and allowed everything to remain intact after thawing. Hopefully they didn't throw it in the microwave. And that is a cool party trick. The researchers used a new technique called aldehyde-stabilized cryopreservation. Aldehyde-stabilized cryopreservation. I don't know if I want that done to me. Which protects brain matter associated with learning and memory. This is a big leap forward, or should I say hop forward, for the preservation of tissue, especially that of brains, as current techniques cause dehydration and crushed neural connections, which creates too much damage for successful resuscitation. Now, this announcement of this rabbit brain comes 5 years after the Brain Preservation Foundation issued a challenge to the cryonics research community. The 21st Century Medicine team received $26,735.05 for winning the Small Mammal Brain Preservation Prize. I was not aware that there was a Small Mammal Brain Preservation Prize listed at over $26,000. Man, I would have done something. I mean, I got a freezer. I would have tried something at least. I didn't know there was money on the table to be had. Now, their research can be read in full at the following link that's already in the chat room and that I did share a few days ago via Facebook and Twitter. Their paper is titled Aldehyde Stabilized Cryopreservation and Not How to Freeze and Unfreeze a Perfect Bunny Brain, which sounds much cooler to me, but no pun intended there. Star Trek might have predicted a lot of technology, but now Austin Powers may finally have his claim to fame. And that's Shagadelic, baby. Yeah, Shagadelic. You don't see anything for poor Austin Powers, but man, can you imagine? That's going to be it. You're going to see Austin Powers introing this technology in a few years. It's going to be interesting. All right, witnesses. Mentioned this at the top. You may wonder, what the heck, why am I talking about witnesses? And this is off of nprnews.org. It's an article about witnesses and how horrible people are at being witnesses. And the article is called How Reliable is Witness Testimony? Now, this caught my eye a couple of days ago, and I really initially was not going to talk about it here on the show. And you may wonder what this has to do with the paranormal. Well, those who have encountered ghosts, UFOs, or cryptids will report their claims. They're essentially witnesses to anomalous phenomena. Now, investigators are also technically witnesses when they have subjective experiences. So when we're out in the field and we do see something, technically we are witnesses, not just investigators, not just researchers, but witnesses. So how reliable are witnesses? Well, according to the Innocence Project, which tracks wrongful conviction cases along with their causes, states that eyewitness misidentification, quote, was a factor in more than 70% of post-conviction DNA exoneration cases in the U.S., making it the leading cause of these wrongful convictions, unquote. 70% of post-conviction DNA exoneration cases in the U.S. because of bad witnesses. And it wasn't intentional, I'm sure. The article states that even when police used scientific methods, and you didn't see the air quotes there, such as lineups, this created even more errors. The police would use lineups that were suggestive that would actually allow them to push a person toward the witness. One of the apparent issues with witnesses is cross-racial identification. Sandra Guerrero Thompson, director of the Criminal Justice Institute at the University of Houston Law Center, states, quote, that people are less able to identify a stranger's face when they are of a different race, unquote. Well, this is bad enough in the crime world, but we have to remember that the same things apply to witnesses in spontaneous paranormal events, even to investigators. What we see and what we think we saw may not actually be what happened. And now you couple this with the fact that many, if not most, investigators are frequently carrying and relying on equipment and are not focused on the environment where the actual action happens. Now, a few weeks ago, December 22nd, 2015, episode number 245, if you want to hear about this, I talked about one great book for understanding the limitations of witnesses, and it was the book of the week that week, December 22nd, and the book was called Invisible Gorilla. This book examines some of the misconceptions we have about the world around us and exposes just how bad of witnesses we can be. And it talked about a lot of psychological factors and things that we don't take into consideration, and some of the biases that we have and our illusions of knowledge and illusions of a lot of things that that happen to us that we kind of take for granted at times. And it's a good book. It's a great book. And I know I probably read it like three times now. It's an awesome book about, it's basically just psychology about how we interpret the world around us, or how the world kind of fools us into thinking that we see what we thought we saw. Well, now we're going to talk about that snowboarder video. If you haven't seen this video, I'm going to throw it in the chat room for their their visual pleasure here. It's an interesting video where this girl is supposedly, where's she at? Japan somewhere? I don't know. Yes, Japan. This was published on April 10th of this year, and it's called Snowboarder Girl Chased by Bear. She was singing Rihanna at Rihanna Work, and she didn't know that the bear was behind her. It's a pretty cool video. It's only a minute 17. You can see her strap on her skates there, and she's humming along. And she's got headphones on, so she can't hear how horrible she's humming. And she straps on her skates. She grabs her selfie stick with her GoPro on it. It starts going down the hill, and you can hear in the background a bear grunting and groaning. And as she's going downhill, you see the bear chasing behind her, ready to, I don't know what it would do, tackle her, rip her head off, her headphones, and maybe just eat her headphones and say, please stop singing. It's really annoying. I don't know. But I've had plenty of people, a lot of people ask me, is this video legitimate? And all over the place, like people that know that I do this at work, and just people that I talk to online, and I'm getting flooded with requests. Can you talk about this on your show tonight? Well, I mean, there's no definitive yes or no right now. But in all honesty, if you go to Snopes has it's unproven right now. And that's kind of where I'm at. I really don't think it's real. In my opinion, that looks very CGI-ish. And there's always that debate of what we see in a video, and people will argue it. Now, there's the exact same thing is happening right now as we speak. If you go on YouTube and you look at this video and you look at the comments, you look at this the articles that are all over the place about this story, people are arguing about those facts. And you have the one camp that says, wow, that's real. She almost died. This bear is real, blah, blah, blah. And then on the other half, you have, oh, come on. How can you believe this is real? It's so fake. It's obviously fake. Well, for me, I kind of take that middle ground and I look at the video and I identify the person. I look at the person, look at what they're doing. It seems like an innocent video enough. She just, you know, going downhill. She's just skiing. She's got a little selfie stick. She's, you know, concentrating on the hill. She's not really worried about a bear. She doesn't hear it. She doesn't see it. Whatever. Okay, that's believable. That's fine. And then we look at the bear. The bear is, in my opinion, unbelievable. Then we start looking at other things. Okay, that's good enough. But then you listen to the audio. The audio doesn't sound right. Something doesn't seem accurate with this video. The sound does not match the video. And so when you have a question like that, what you do is you look for videos that are very similar to this. What do other GoPro videos sound like that you can hear the person? What kind of noise should be going across the microphone? And one of the things that immediately when I first saw this video on my phone, I think it was on lunch at work today or yesterday, whenever it was, and I heard the sound didn't sound right. You should be hearing wind. You should be hearing a lot more of the ski. You can actually hear the bear in the background the whole entire time. That is a giant red flag. That's 10-foot by 10-foot red flag flying in the wind, flapping in the wind. Now, that was a big tip off to me that this video is more than likely not real. I mean, if it smells like a skunk and it looks like a chicken and it walks like a duck, it's probably all the above and it's probably not real. Now, somebody said that the audio, and I wasn't able to find this before the show, was pretty much a ripoff of the video game Skyrim. Now, I'm not a big video game player. I don't really play much. The last console I bought was the Wii like 5 years ago. So I don't play video games, but I'll take his word for it. Skyrim, pretty popular game with a first-person shooter. I mean, what game isn't a first-person shooter anymore? But there's bears, and they say that this bear audio is pretty much an exact ripoff, if not an actual ripoff, of the game and put on here. So then I found another video of her skiing at the same location. And you can hear in the audio, it's obviously completely different. You can hear what it's actually supposed to sound like. So when I found that video and I heard the complete difference in audio, I knew right away this video is more than likely, I would give it a 90% fake. But I don't know why. Why would you hoax this? Why would you fake this? And it's awful good to have movement of a bear. Also that when you look at this, I watched it several times. I watched it in slow motion. I watched it sped up, and I even drew on a piece of paper. I wrote down where I see a bush here and a tree there, and I kind of drew a map looking at how she's moving in direction, and then I kind of draw where I think the bear is. And the bear is all over the place. This bear travels a good 50 feet left to right. So that's also telling me that this is not exactly what we think it is. But why? That's the big question that I have about this video. Why fake it? Why make it like this? Why do that? We will find out, I'm sure. I'm sure the facts about this story will unwind over time, and we'll get to the bottom of this, and we'll get a better sense of what was really going on behind the scenes. My guess is that somebody just wanted to create a cool video and get hits. I think there was over 2.7 million views. Let me go check this. 2,824,991 with strangely 9,807 thumbs up and 7,129 thumbs down. So it's doing its job. It's creating controversy. It's dividing the room. People, half the people believe it. The other half think it's complete bunk. And I'm on the latter half. I think it's complete bunk. So we're going to jump to the book of the week right now. And this is a kind of out of left field. You probably didn't see this one coming. It's called SAS Tracking Handbook. What? You're like, what? What does SAS stand for? Well, SAS stands for Special Air Service. It's essentially the British version of Special Forces. Very skilled trackers in their own right, probably some of the best still around. Not to bash the United States here, but these guys are good, and they're tied into going back to 1941, I believe, the Special Air Services of the British Army. So that's what SAS stands for. And it's written by Barry Davies. And most of this book, I would say 80, maybe 90% of this book is about tracking people. And you may wonder, okay, I'm with you so far, Brian, but where is this going? How does this have anything to do with the paranormal? Well, tracking to me is a, well, and if you read this book too, it's a lost art. It's something that people don't do pretty much anymore. There's really not that many experts out there as far as trackers are concerned. And tracking it, for me, as far as cryptozoology is concerned, I think tracking is the best method that we're ever going to have of finding any evidence of Bigfoot or any other cryptid creatures. To me, banging on trees with sticks and yelling and screaming in the woods, not the best ways of investigating. And I liken that to the flashlight trick and using some of the other questionable technology that investigators use out there. It's the same subjective methods, I think, because any answer, any kind of sound you get is going to be an instant reply. But for me, tracking, I think, is the way to go here. And this book, again, it starts out talking about tracking people. And when I wrote Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist, I wanted to take baby steps as far as research and investigation methodologies. And I talked a lot about getting out there, getting out in the woods, getting out into different places, and just getting the experience of being out of the woods. And I didn't really realize until I read this book that there's a little piece missing with that, that I didn't go back far enough. And this book does a great job of doing this, where the author basically states that if you go and you go to places that aren't heavily traveled, not like a national park or a larger park, but somewhere that has a path that not too many people travel on, and you get used to looking for sign of people, footprints, tracks, and you follow them, obviously there's a trail, but to look for different things along the path. And also he talks about creating kind of a way of learning through this, getting a lot of people together, having people walk on an unmarked trail, doing different things such as walking backwards, laying objects down, stopping, starting, going off trail, running, doing different things, and having you go back with somebody who was actually there and took notes and identifying what happened when. And if you do this on a consistent basis, you'd actually become a very good tracker. And when you think of trackers, you think of Indian scouts, guys in the woods that are looking for a lost person or a convict or somebody's a serial killer's lost in the woods, and you look, oh, there's a bent branch. And I can tell you that this bent branch means that this person weighs 230 pounds, they're carrying a yellow backpack, and they're wearing boots with brown soles. Well, yeah, okay. That kind of information is not realistic, but it is possible to be able to guesstimate a person's size and weight based on the size of their prints, the depth of the track, comparative to other things, as well as some telltale signs of what a person's carrying, which if they're carrying something in one arm versus the other arm, or if they're carrying a heavy backpack, or if they set something down, if they're using a walking stick, obviously, different things, you'd really be amazed. And this book really brings it to fruition of some of the things that you'll be able to figure out about people in the woods. And all that leads up to animals. Now, there's only one chapter on animals, tracking and tracks of animals, and talking about sign. And one thing it does say that scat or poop is a better indication of an animal, not people, because if a person is pooping in the woods, there's probably something really wrong with them and you don't want to get anywhere near them. But as far as animals are concerned, this is probably the best way, because with scat, you can tell. Don't pick it up, I don't suggest, but you can use the back of your hand or put your hand over it. If it's still warm, that animal's close. And different things with the coloration and the texture, if you break it open, if it's really dusty inside, it's days old, and it depends on the animal. You can pretty much tell different days how long ago this animal left this particular scat. And you can pretty much tell what kind of animal left it by the size, the shape, and where it was found. And it's this is a really good book here, and it really does a good job of giving you baby steps, telling you all the history of tracking and how to's of tracking, but kind of bringing you along and teaching you and telling you, look, this book is great. It's going to give you great information, but you need to get out there. And that's the exact same message I had in my book, Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist. This book is a great launching point, but there's a lot of other things that you're going to need to learn, a lot of other things you're going to need to read, but you're also going to need to get out there in the woods and experience these things and get out there and learn how to track animals and things. And this book is a little expensive. I got mine at a half-price bookstore for $7. You can get it online for like $13. But if you want to get into cryptozoology, this is a must-have book. This really teaches you, and it really inspires you to want to get out there and look for sign, look for things, look for evidence of people or of animals. And the more you do this, the more you get out there and the more you're looking for any kind of evidence, the more you won't speculate, but the more you'll actually know. And that's exactly the basic lesson of this, is to lead you away from assuming things and actually having knowledge by gaining experience in the field. So the SAS Tracking Handbook by Barry Davies, the book of the week, this week for April 12th, 2016. Great book. And conventions, I mentioned the 9th annual Butler Paranormal Conference coming this Saturday, April 16th in Butler, Pennsylvania. I'll be speaking at that event. If you didn't know, you haven't been listening to the show. It rhymed. I'm a poet and didn't know it. UFOs. There is one UFO event happening this weekend, Aurora Alien Encounter, one of my favorite UFO stories that probably didn't happen, in Aurora, Texas, from 1897, crashed into a windmill, and the alien supposedly was buried in the Aurora Cemetery. I've been there, didn't get to see. There was no headstone. There was a little sign on the side of the road. Real big disappointment. Drove out of my way. I was actually on I-35 coming from Oklahoma from a convention. Actually, didn't go to the convention. I went to an abandoned TB hospital. That was a long story. But anyway, I got to see this. It's great. This event is occurring this weekend in the city of Aurora, which is up just north of Fort Worth, northwest, I think. Taking place, if you're in that area, you're not anywhere near Pennsylvania, you can go ahead and go to that. 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Central Daylight Time. Now, who's going to be there? I'll tell you who's going to be there. Nick Redfern is going to be there. You got to see Nick Redfern. Nick Redfern's an awesome guy, extremely knowledgeable in all facets of the paranormal. And the keynote speaker is going to be Travis Walton. If you know anything about UFOs, you probably know who Travis Walton is. That's going to be a great event this weekend as well. Cryptozoology, I got nothing. I got nothing on the calendar till May 6th through the 8th. See how they snuck that in there. 2016 Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. I'll also be speaking at that event. That's the next one on my list. So that's that. And coming up next week, I'm actually going to be out of the country. Tuesday night, I'll be leaving Haiti, and I'll be on my way to Jamaica. So there will be no live show next week, but fear not, there will be some Paranormal News Insider programming archive version for you to listen to. Thanks to Cindy, who's going to put all that together for us for next week. But yeah, I wanted to do a show, but don't really have a whole lot of time, and I didn't want to throw something out there. I wanted to make the shows meaningful and provide you with some good information. And it's going to be hard enough when I come back from vacation to put together a show in 3 days. But that's why I skipped the UFO stuff. I got a little stories already. And I'll be talking about, if you haven't heard it enough, we're going to be talking about the Butler Paranormal Convention. I'll have decompressed from that on the next episode in 2 weeks from tonight. And again, big thanks to Cindy, my producer, and Dita for her help in the chat room. I don't know what happened with the sound. I guess everyone lost sound. So I was talking to myself again. I seem to do that a lot, talk to myself. Well, I do that all the time, not just here, but at work, at home, in the car. I think everyone does it in the car, right? I hope so. Maybe it's just me. Great. Here comes the loony bin. And everyone else out there for tuning in tonight, if you're listening in on the archives, I highly appreciate that. I know you're listening on the archive. I see the downloads and I appreciate it. I'm getting more and more downloads each and every week. So I'm excited about that. The show is still growing, which is great after 261 episodes. It's amazing. And as always, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.